And welcome to the We Will Nomad podcast. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Andre.
And together, we will nomad. Welcome to episode 54 of the We Will Nomad podcast. Today, we are going to be speaking about, is financial freedom achievable? What do you say, Andre?
Well, I don't know, is it?
I guess it depends on how you define financial freedom and freedom generally.
Yeah, we'll pose a few questions and also define these different ideas. What is financial independence? What is financial freedom? And this is our interpretation of it, I guess. And then we'll dive deeper into what steps you can take. And I think what we've took over the years to got us to this point. We get often asked, oh, how do you guys travel full time? What do you do for work and income? Well, hopefully we're going to tell you a little bit more about that, and you can learn a little bit more about how we got where we are and why we can actually do this. Before we get into the main discussion, let me just remind you guys to please rate us or review us on Apple Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps the show. And if you want to, you can take a screenshot of your review and email it to us at wewillnomadpod@gmail.com with a question, and we will answer your question on an upcoming episode.
And your question can be related to this podcast or any other podcast or anything travel related.
And if you don't want to do that, you are more than welcome to head over to our website. If you don't know, we've got a website called wewillnomad.com where we write about our travels. We've got plenty of blog posts about traveling, obviously, destinations. And I think one thing that's relevant to this discussion is every destination that we visited, especially over the last few years, or since we've traveled full time, we've put together a budget report for.
That's right. We even have budget reports from as early as, I think, 2015.
So in case you want an idea of what kind of budget we travel on, there's always this perception that travel should be an expensive endeavor. And although, as you will see, as we dive into this discussion, is that we've got a very frugal lifestyle. We always prioritize traveling. And the way we did that was to travel with a budget-orientated mindset. Our budget reports will give you good insight into how we spent and what we prioritized.
And I think it shows a little bit of reality in the sense of travel need not be expensive and it need not be luxurious. But also, if you want to travel cheaply, it doesn't need to mean staying in dorm rooms and dodgy, dingy accommodation. So we find a very good balance between having a very comfortable and fun travel experience, staying in decent accommodation, but still managing to keep a good budget for our travels.
For sure. And I think the point is, before we started traveling full time, we still prioritized traveling, even though it was more a part-time endeavor. We worked full time, but we scraped together the days and made sure we put 3-4 weeks a year together and did as cost-effective trip as we could. And even then, people were quite surprised to be traveled so regularly.
But we would often spend the same for that month's holiday than most people would spend for a 10-day holiday.
Even
so
less
that
for
was
sometimes.
That was the big thing, is that we tried to stretch not only our time, but to stretch our money over that period so that we could get the most out of our travel experience.
Okay, let's just talk about some more questions that we're going to answer before we head into this. We're going to define what is financial independence and what we define as financial freedom as well. And then we'll discuss 10 points with a bit of details on a way for you to get there. And lastly, if you're on our website, don't forget to head over to our travel destination finder. We call it Where to Travel Next. And we've worked quite hard on it over the past year, and it's an ongoing project. If you don't know about it, this will hopefully help you find a destination that suits your budget.
Also your preferences.
Yes, of course. I mean, the idea is we always have this struggle. Where do we go to? Where the weather is the way we like it, possibly where it's slightly off season, or potentially where we don't have to pay for a visa. You know, maybe we want to limit ourselves to a specific region, or we want to define a specific activity we're interested in doing. So this tool contains loads and loads of data, and it's ongoing updated. So we update a lot of the data almost on a weekly basis. But this will help you choose your next destination. So head over to wewillnomad.com and go to our Where to Travel Next travel tool and go check it out, please.
And if you've got any tips or suggestions on how we can improve this filter tool or different travel preferences which you would like to see there, pop us an email and let us know.
Absolutely. And don't forget, subscribe to our newsletter. You will find links to that in the show notes as well. Please feel free to email us any questions. Okay, so we get into this?
Yes, let's get into this. So right. We all know that there are so many people who dream about financial independence or financial freedom. And the truth is, very few people actually realize this in their lifetime. I think the reason for that is that most people tend to believe that in order to accumulate wealth, you need to earn a ridiculously large sum of money, a crazy salary, maybe win the lotto or inherit rich. But the truth is that gaining financial freedom or financial independence has a lot less to do with the amount that you earn as it does with the amount that you spend. So we're going to touch on those topics: how much you earn, how much you spend, and how much you save. Even though this is achievable for a lot more people than they realize, the truth is also that very few people are prepared to put in the work and the effort and the sacrifice over a period of time in order to make this achievable.
Maybe we should just start also trying to define what, as we see it, what's the difference between financial independence and financial freedom and financial security. Maybe before I dive into this, I should just put a small disclaimer in here.
I think that's always important.
We're not going to give any financial advice or investment, obviously. And firstly, we're not financial advisors or investment specialists. So we're just merely talking about a process. So if you are, if you do think this is a set path, please consider your own specific needs and requirements and possibly consult with a financial advisor, which will take you through the best possible scenario. But hopefully these points we touch on can give you good guidance.
I think the whole point of this podcast and what we want to bring across is we want to bring about a little bit of motivation and positivity in the fact that this is achievable, possibly to more people than who realize that it's achievable. And also at the same time, to let you know that it doesn't just happen overnight and it doesn't happen without hard work and ongoing commitment and dedication.
It's important to set some goals, you know, and I think it's important to understand that we actually have a lot more control than what we care to believe. You know, the idea that things just happen if we wait for
by
it.
By chance.
Or by chance is not
to
realistic.
To a lucky select few.
As ultimately, we will live the life based on the choices we make. And we need to be a lot more realistic about those and understand that we play an active role in making certain decisions.
And to consciously take charge of those.
For sure. Okay, so what is financial security?
Yes, let's give us a definition of these three different terms.
Our definition is, this is financial security is when you have sufficient passive income which can cover your basic living expenses. Now, basic living expenses would be survival, accommodation, food, basic necessities. And if you achieve financial security, hopefully there'll be an adequate income indefinitely to cover those expenses. Now, this is not going to in any way give you the lifestyle you might want. And that brings us to the next level, what we ultimately personally aspire to was financial independence. And there's another step we also refer to as financial freedom, but there's a bit of a blur between these two, because for us, financial independence will get you to a point where your passive income will cover your lifestyle indefinitely. And big difference here is lifestyle, not necessities. So if you want to travel and your current lifestyle is geared towards that, hopefully financial independence stage will allow you to keep doing that. Now, if you reach a level of so-called financial freedom, and why I say there's a blur between these two is because having some form of financial independence actually gives you a lot of freedom.
That's right.
All right, but total financial freedom might mean that you don't have to worry about money at all, which is not really realistic for most people. Even us who have achieved financial independence, it's not like we can throw caution to the wind and
spend
go crazy.
Spend on absolutely everything and all sorts of luxuries.
Our ideal lifestyle is not necessarily realistic. We still have to live within certain limits to make this achievable and sustainable. So it's important to just distinguish between those issues.
So obviously your first step is always to cover your absolute basic living expenses, which we termed as financial security. Secondly would be to have a choice lifestyle, which is where we currently are. In other words, it enables us to also travel and spend a little bit on some luxury items in addition to our basic necessities. And then thirdly would be financial freedom, which is having the absolute freedom to spend on anything and any luxury which comes across your path.
But we're not going to talk about financial freedom. What we're referring to and discussions focusing on today is financial independence.
And the freedom it brings with it.
Absolutely. Because that's the critical part. So I think we have to set some realistic goals for ourselves. And, we all want to be billionaires. I don't even want to say millionaires anymore. Because a millionaire is so yesterday.
Depends on which currency you're speaking about.
they do say today's million is yesterday's... Today's billion is yesterday's million. That's the way life goes. All right, so we're stuck into these 10 points.
Yes. So no matter if your goal is to reach financial security, financial independence, or possibly eventually financial freedom, we've defined 10 steps here which we think can help you to get there. And there are the steps that have led us to where we are today, to have a little bit of freedom thanks to financial independence. So step number one is to take stock. Take stock of your current financial situation. Now, this includes two parts. The first is to have a look at your current assets and current liabilities so that you can see what your current net worth is. If you're working towards any net worth or financial goal, you need to define your starting point first in order to understand how you can get from your starting point to your end goal.
And the part nobody likes to do is you have to create a budget. So it's as simple as understanding what your necessary payments are. What do you need to pay in rent every month? What do you need in terms of insurance? Or maybe set up a budget amount for groceries or entertainment. Because if you're like most people, you have no clue how much you're actually spending. So you need to set this baseline, and then, which we'll get to in step two, you're gonna try and track your expenses to figure out whether you actually live within your budget. But it's a good starting point to create these categories so you can get a feel for what is essentials and what is non-essentials and how you prioritize though. Is that pretty much what you're talking about, taking stock?
Yes, I think there's two aspects. One is just understanding what your net worth is, where you currently stand. And then with that budget, like you said, you can have categories, but most importantly, to split every category into, it's either an essential category or a non-essential category.
Okay, so that takes us straight into point number two, which is actually keep track of your spending. Like you said in point one, you cannot go somewhere if you don't know where you are. And this is what most people miss. The idea of how do I pay off my credit card debt? How do I make smarter investment choices? But I need to have a realistic picture. Now, if you start keeping track of your expenses, it's like a smack in the face. There's no hiding from your bad habits anymore. It's a realistic window into your bad habits.
And it might be quite surprising if you track your expenses or your spendings for a couple of months to realize exactly where your money is going, and particularly how it is split across your essentials versus your non-essentials and luxury items category.
The reality is that we do spend money on smaller things because we don't think it matters, and only by actually tracking all your expenses will give you the bigger picture, and that'll allow you the opportunity to prioritize later down the line. Now, there are some great tools you can use to do this. We have been using Quicken, which is probably not ideal for everybody because it's a little bit more hands-on, but it's a very powerful tool, and the beauty of it is it gives us complete reporting control over almost 20 years worth of data, which is just phenomenal to provide some insight into our spending. And also a place where you can see all your investments and your accounts together. But there's some great online tools and apps available. When we travel, we actually use a travel expense tracker. It's called Trubby Pocket, but there's many of those out there, which is quite nice. So you can define your trips and set up some categories, and eventually you can export it to another format if you need it. But you can also go on to, if you're in the States, some very good starting points would be personalcapital.com as well as Mint. Mint is very well known. And we're in South Africa at the moment. In South Africa, there's a great product called 227.com. And you link all your accounts to it and pretty much does all the work for you. It automatically categorizes your spendings and you can just log on there and see, oh, is this how much I spent on coffee? Or even better, and this is the beauty of keeping track. I think this is, it becomes a practice in efficiency. You start finding those small little leaks which we normally just don't know. Remember that subscription to, I don't know,
some other magazine which Disney. Actually isn't being delivered, or it's still being delivered to your old home address.
Exactly. Or that streaming service that you never use anymore. Or
the gym membership you never use.
Exactly. All those small things that just seemingly forgot and never use. And even more importantly, it'll show you where money is wasted. So maybe you've got too many bank accounts, it's too expensive. Maybe you can make a huge saving by just consolidating all your banking, or just get a cheaper account. So this is, I think, the first step.
And while this may seem tedious, it doesn't need to be hard work, but what is important is to find a tool that works for you. So if you're more detail orientated and you like seeing the nitty gritty and being in control, you might choose one of these tools which allows you more control and is powerful. More comprehensive, okay. Powerful. But if you don't like that kind of thing, that kind of admin, it doesn't mean you can't keep track. There are tools which really make it easy for you. So just play around for the first couple of months, try three different apps or tools and see which one works for you, because it doesn't matter how budget orientated or detail or admin orientated you are, there is an app out there that will make it easy for you.
Especially if you can use as digital payments or electronic payments as much as possible, because the moment obviously you spend cash, it's a little bit more complicated and cash just tends to disappear. Even for us, who's been tracking expenses diligently for literally decades, cash becomes this mystery object.
Always.
We track our cash expenses and that becomes more of a manual mission, but there's always a disparity.
That's why I always prefer to use electronic payments for anything, mm-hmm. just because there's the record of it and it just means that that money can't get lost.
Yes, okay. So now you've tracked your expenses, now what?
This leads us on to point number three, which is prioritize. Mm. So you can start with this before you start tracking your expenses, but you'll really get into it once you have got an idea of your spending. So once you've been tracking your expenses for a few months and you can see how much you spend on each of your various categories. Now, while we continuously talk about essential categories and non-essential categories, luxury items, within both of those, you may have multiple subcategories. So you can go into as much detail as you want. If you want to know how much you spend on cigarettes, on smoking, on coffee, on anything to that detail. Sometimes when we travel through Italy, we have a category gelato, so we can actually see how much we spend on ice cream.
Correction, how much you spend on ice cream. You've got an ice cream problem. I suppose put
it's
that
not
out
a problem.
There.
I have no problem with ice cream whatsoever.
Okay, but
or
just remember.
Or maybe much broader. It could just be food in general.
Top tip, guys, if you're out there, if you eat ice cream every day in Italy, it's going to add up.
Definitely.
Add up to your hips.
So no matter how much detail you have in your categories, once you see your spending after tracking it, you need to take a look at those categories and prioritize what is important to you. Now, obviously, your essential items aren't number one priority. You need a roof over your head, you need to have some food, and there will be some other basic essentials which are non-negotiable that you need to spend money on.
But you'll always find something where you can save.
Yes. So on your essential spending, you might still find that you can cut back on the amount that you spend on the essential items. And then when it comes to your non-essential categories or items, you might find that there's so much spending there that you can simply eliminate. And what you need to do is you need to prioritize what's important to you. So you maybe realize that you're spending double the amount on something which actually isn't all that important to you, and you aren't necessarily spending enough on something that is important to you. So for instance, when we looked at our budget 10 or 15 years ago, we made the conscious decision that even though we were trying to save as much as possible for future long-term travel, travel was still important to us. And so we put aside a certain amount of money for every year to be able to spend on a holiday. So even though that might seem like a luxury item to some people, to us, that was a priority. And every person's priorities will be different when it comes to luxury spending. It may be you want to have really good coffee, you want to go on a holiday. It doesn't matter what it is, but make sure that you are spending your non-essential money on things that are important to you and not things that are actually not that important.
Okay, so that brings us up to the next point. How do you make a difference in your spending? And point number four is to be more frugal in your spending. Ultimately, it comes down to spend less than you earn. That's probably the most important thing. Don't live beyond your means, and a few ways to do that. But to be frugal, you need to avoid the traps of consumerism, very importantly. You need to pay more attention to what value products offer to you right now. And one good way to do this, is what I can suggest, is understand, for example, the concept of cost per use. So if you're going to be thinking of buying something, think about how often you're going to use it. Maybe it's something simple as a pair of shoes. If you're only going to be using it once, it's going to be a very expensive pair of shoes.
And also, not only just how often you use it, but how much joy or pleasure it brings you.
It has. I think this is one of the things we've learned after we really went through this process of getting rid of everything. Because once we started traveling full time, obviously we didn't have a house, we didn't have our own base. And we realized how little value our personal possessions have to other people.
And just how much we've spent on items which really add no value to our life.
Even so, I would like to think most of our spending was fairly, you know,
conscious,
calculated. Yeah. But still, there was so much stuff that served a purpose in that moment. And maybe in that moment, it was justifiable. But over the long term, we probably could have done without it. And this goes for other indiscriminate spendings as well. You know, like that drinks out after work, or I'm not saying you shouldn't have fun, but if it's in your budget and you've prioritized it and you still manage to save, then go for it. But you'll have to make some saving somewhere.
I agree. And that leads on to the next point. Save, save, and save.
Yes, because saving is hard for most people because everybody wants to be, you know, instantly gratified because we work so hard and we deserve to spoil ourselves.
And it's so easy to tell yourself that. No, but I deserve this. Oh, but wait, I've got this money. Oh, I got a raise. Oh, great. That means I can now afford this extra thing, this fancy new car. This...
Yes, I worked overtime and now I can buy a new motorbike.
And that just means you're back to square one. So this is the whole point. It's not about how much you earn. It's more about how much you spend relative to what you earn. And that comes down to how much you can save.
Famously, Warren Buffett, you know, everybody knows Warren Buffett, he's like this world famous investor, still lives in the same house he lived in 40 years ago.
No way.
He still goes to McDonald's for a breakfast burger at $3. This guy's got literally billions of dollars. Now, you know, he's not a Scrooge per se, but certain things is not that important to him.
And not only that, but he adjusts his spending according to whether the market has done well the day before or not.
Yes.
So if he's earned less, he spends less.
Well, I think that's a good rule of thumb for someone like us who sort of now have to live off our investments. We have to look at how much can we afford to spend, and you have to adjust your lifestyle accordingly. But if you're working towards financial independence, it's super critical to never raise your quality of life, your income
increases,
because this is, like you said, it's going to take you back to square one.
You rather want to increase that saving portion of your money and let that work for you, because not only is it about putting the largest portion aside into savings that you possibly can, it's also about the time at which you do this. So the earlier on you can put away those savings and let the savings start working for you, the better. You always quote Albert Einstein. So he says that compound interest is the eighth wonder of the world. He who understands it, earns it, and he who doesn't, pays it.
You know, that last part is actually the best part. You know, understanding how important it is to get going early. You know, we all thought when we were in our early 20s, I'll start saving later.
Yeah, this is the time to party, and later I'll be serious and become an adult and start saving. But that's the wrong way around to do it.
Blow my paycheck on booze and I don't know. Other stuff. But, you know, and it's not about not having fun. It's about deciding what's important. And it's effectively short-term thinking versus long-term thinking. And this is pretty much a theme that's going to come through all of these points. And you can actually apply that to every single point. The idea is that you've got to remove that idea of instant gratification. Yes, it's hard to save and pay for something in cash. But it teaches you some valuable lessons. It teaches you the value, and it makes you understand what it takes to earn that money to be able to pay for something.
And I think this is where, looking back at something, we can both see in our own lives how we made some small sacrifices, but we made them early on. And we started saving, both of us individually, at a very young age. And what that means is that when you save, if it's your $10, at a certain point in time, it's not just the $10 that you manage to save. It's the $10 at whatever interest rate or investment rate over a time period. And that's where it makes such a big difference to have saved the $10 10 years earlier versus 10 years later. because where you end up in 10 years' time is such a big difference.
I think the last point I want to make on saving is make sure that when you save, what you do with that excess funds is as important. Make sure you put it in a cost-effective saving vessel. So don't leave it under your mattress and couch. Otherwise, inflation just eats it up. You want to put it into an investment account with very low fees. There's no such thing as a guaranteed return, but you want to make sure that your funds grow over time. And these calculations have been made many times, and it shows that if you start early and you invest a small annual amount for, say, 7 years, the first 7 years of your working career, you're actually way ahead of anybody who starts doing the same 15 years later and has to keep doing it and will never catch up to you. Time is such a critical element. And it's not only the time, because one of the few things we actually have control over is what we pay for our investments. And I'm talking about total cost of investment, banking fees, platform fees. So make sure that you don't save your money and pay half of it to a investment broker unnecessarily. On fees, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because 1% over time can make a massive difference to your retirement goals.
And then one other thing that might assist you in saving, personally, we don't believe in putting money in different pots, but if it does motivate you to save, it's sometimes a good idea to put aside money for, this is for my travel fund, this is for something else that you're working towards. So that can just help you and motivate you to see something growing for a very specific purpose or goal.
That is quite a common way to do it, and I don't think there's something wrong with that. One of the reasons why we were successful in our approach is because we share a common thinking about finances. And statistically, if you are in a relationship and you share common goals or have the same idea about money, you will do much better than either individuals or couples who don't agree on how money is spent. And it's not only about my money, your money. It's just, how do we maximize our opportunity with savings? How do we maximize the efficiency of what we have?
I think it makes it easier to make those small short-term sacrifices ongoing basis in order to reach the long-term goal that you both know that you're working towards.
I think the saving portion of this, or the saving point of this discussion, can actually be a discussion on its own.
That's true. How do you do
How do we do it? Now, maybe we'll dig into this in a future podcast, because
motivated.
And as a couple also. And how do we, exactly, how do you deal with money in a relationship? How do you deal with money when you travel? How do you do it without creating conflict? But I think let's hop into the next point, because this discussion is primarily about achieving financial independence, and it assumes you are receiving some form of income, because we need to... Because
you have to start somewhere.
You have to start somewhere, and there's only so many ways to get wealthy. Either you inherit, or you marry,
or you win the lotto.
Into money. Statistically, that's going to end you up in a worse place, but yes. Or you create a business, and which is hopefully successful. Or you start saving and investing very early. Okay, point number six is maximize your income potential. What a lot of people tend to forget is that we only have so many paychecks in our lives.
Yep, absolute finite amount.
Every cent you earn is something you might not be able to replace again. Yes, you can argue, well, I might get a raise, or maybe I get a second job, or maybe I get lucky and I get something else. I don't know. Sell my business for millions to Google. Good luck with that. But the reality is that we've got a finite amount of human capital in us. And when you work, that's actually the most important asset. So you've got to leverage your skills, your knowledge, and your experience to achieve absolute maximum income potential while you are working. And this means make the best of your working years without negatively impacting your saving ability by living beyond your means. So understand your limits in terms of income. Understand that every paycheck you receive is one paycheck less that you will never see again. And make sure that that counts as much as you can. There's a few things you can do, I guess. I mean, you can look for other opportunities while you work. We were always dabbling in some side hustles.
Side businesses are a great way to make a little bit of money on the side. Sometimes it's even about doing something that you enjoy, but it's just not financially viable to do that as your main income. So you can have your main job, which earns you your primary income, and then you can have a side hustle, which just gives you a little bit of extra money.
Personally, I was never that invested in the idea of live to work. If work personally, for me, is more a means to an end. And if you are one of those rare individuals who find themselves in a employment or in a career which they're absolutely enthusiastic about, then you're very lucky. Very few people actually manage to do that. So a lot of the time, the work we do is for a purpose, and that's to live. You know, we need to earn some sort of income and survive on it. But there are opportunities out there. I mean, we did a job, we received money, and that put bread on the table. But what we tried to do is we tried to leverage the little bit we had. One of the primary ways we created passive income was using buy-to-let property, because it could mean that you gear your own out-of-pocket contributions, and that builds capital over time. So your return on investment is pretty good.
We also had small side businesses.
Yes, we did.
Which gave us a pretty steady income, and it was something that at least didn't have to be sustainable. So because it was only a side business, we maximized it when it worked, and when we realized it was no longer feasible, we changed and we just found something else to bring us a secondary income.
I mean, a lot of people are super lucky and they start something as a side business and that just becomes their whole thing, you know, and it's a transition completely away from their career. But I think the point we're trying to make here is if you're a professional, try and leverage your skills. I think it's critical.
Increase your qualifications.
Yes.
Do anything you can that can increase your earning potential, knowing that it need not be for forever. Mm. I was in a corporate job and sort of got stuck a little bit in that climbing the corporate ladder. But I always had an end goal in mind. And that's quite important, is to maximize your earnings early on. Try and achieve the best that you possibly can in your career, no matter what it is. Just because you do increase your qualifications and have a great earning potential, it doesn't mean that you need to get stuck in that and that you will be doing it for forever. But the earlier on you can do this and maximize it, the better.
You know, just a thought occurred to me now as we're going through this list. We talk about all these steps, but how do you know when is enough enough? Because we're talking about maximize your human capital. But at what point do you realize, okay, maybe I can stop?
Well, I think that might be a discussion for a whole nother
exactly.
podcast.
I think so too. But this is a discussion you need to have with yourself.
Oh, yes.
And this is a big part of planning. So, and that's going to depend on your goal. Well, what do you want to achieve? So we'll maybe dive into that at another point. But let's move on. Point number seven
is you need to be comfortable on the road less traveled. Now, there's a reason.
What does that mean?
Well, there's a reason why not everybody you know is financially independent. It's the road less traveled. It's not that easy and it's not comfortable. It's not a path that everybody chooses to take, and it's not a path that everybody can continue along because it's not easy.
It's primarily due to societal pressure.
Yes.
Consumer attitudes, maybe our approach to keeping up with our neighbors.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you constantly want to drive a fancier car than your neighbor, live in a better area, buy better designer clothes, always go out with your friends, buy the extra cocktails and things like that, the chances are very slim that you're going to reach financial independence unless you have inherited rich or earn really, really well. But so, it all comes down to not fitting in and not just doing what is comfortable and easy at the moment and gives you instant gratification.
But not only that, the gratification is one thing, because we tend to justify these things to ourselves, but understanding that you don't have to follow that preset path. You don't have to conform in a way. There's nothing wrong with having one pair of shoes.
Or driving an old car.
That's fine.
Or old bike, motorbike. It really doesn't matter. It's about what's important to you and what is your goal and how are you planning on achieving it. I mean, we received a lot of criticism over the years with regards to our spending or possibly our lack of spending, where people laughed at us and, but why, you can afford to do this. Why don't you do this? Whether it's having a fancier car or buying better clothes or going on a more expensive holiday. And the truth was that we had decided amongst us what was important to us and what we were prepared to spend money on. And that was okay. We were fine to accept people laughing at us for driving old vehicles because we knew where we were going and why we were making that sacrifice.
It's actually more a reflection on the people around you than on yourself. And it teaches you a bit more about being at peace with your choices. Now, we're not saying you should live like a bum, and quite the opposite. We used to go overseas holiday once a year. And it's not like we lived cheaply.
No, not at all.
We, you know, it's not like we were completely cheap and lived in a cheap place and ate cheap food.
No, but we spend money differently to the majority of our friends.
And I think that's the thing. You got to learn to be comfortable with it. Learn to find peace with yourself. And that there's this weird contrast in terms of people's attitude towards what you might do. How can you afford to do this, but you don't do that, for example? Or why do you...
Yeah, people didn't understand that.
There's a strange disparity in that. But don't be scared of that. Embrace that. Don't think you have to just do what everybody else does. And I think that's a big step to this path of financial independence, because you actually appreciate the value of things more eventually. Okay, leads us on to last 3 points. Number 8 is plan for change or be prepared for change.
Oh, yes, always.
You don't have to ask us about this. I remember we were working so hard. We had so many plans and we were thinking, okay, maybe we're going to take a break from work and we're just going to travel for a bit, like normal people do. You know, you save, you say we're going to take off a year or two and we're going to get back into work. Then we thought, no, wait, let's move to, I don't know, Australia and find
work
a job there.
For a couple of years, because that'll be a good way to travel an expensive country.
But and then we really got stuck into it and said, no, wait, there's a better way. If we do this and this and this.
Maybe we can reach that elusive point.
And we work for another year and we sell these things and this grows to that. And then we're going to make so much money and we're going to be able to retire. Great plan, man. But you know what? The world is ready to throw you a curveball. And I think if anything over the last year has taught us that, there is so many unknowns and you should be prepared for those things. So you can plan, and it's good to plan, because you can only work with the facts you have at hand at the moment. There's no point looking back and saying, oh, I should have done that. If you did your homework at that time and made the best informed decision with the facts at hand, then you can't blame yourself for making a poor choice in retrospect. But as part of that planning, you should prepare for change.
Well, this is the thing. You can't ever only have one plan. You need to have not only plan A, but plan B, plan C, plan D, and all the way on to where we once ended up. I think it was like D, E, or F.
But okay, if we're not talking about finances, you know, you got to get the basics in place. Make sure you have a steady emergency fund, for example. You got to cover the basics. You got to make sure you know, get, obviously, the first thing is get rid of debt. Make sure you have an emergency fund for a nice buffer. Make sure that you have health insurance or dread disease cover, or those kind of things. Those are important things you need to have. Because, you know, if your car breaks down and you can't cover it, it puts a huge dent in your planning. Never mind that. If you actually get to a point and suddenly the market collapses dreadfully, or pandemic.
Absolutely.
And your timing was off for some reason, or the property market collapse, or I don't know, or you lose your job, who knows?
Well, there we go. You can speak to us about that. We had so much property, and just as we wanted to sell our property, the property market completely collapsed.
Yeah,
so exactly. These things happen. It doesn't matter how well you plan. You can't plan for every single scenario.
But this should not put you off pursuing this goal. Now, we obviously had this goal in mind because we wanted to travel full time. But whatever your goal is, you shouldn't say, well, the risks are too high. Because you know what? The truth is that there's no reward for no risk. You have to be prepared to take a bit of risk if you want to get to where you want to be.
That's why I would say that at this point, you know, plan for change is almost twofold. The one is calculations wise. Plan for various scenarios, plan for worst case scenarios, and what if this goes wrong or that goes wrong, and hopefully not this and that at the same time. But secondly, it's a mindset. It's a mindset of accepting that you do not have any guarantees. You are going to make some calculated risks and you're going to plan accordingly, but there is no guarantee, and be okay with that. Be comfortable that you have a buffer for whatever does change.
That's one of the nicest things. Now, after the fact, it's easy to say that, but once you've actually worked through all these steps and you are firmly in control of your expenses and you know, I've got a budget, I keep track of my expenses, I've prioritized my spending, I did everything I could, it gives you such a sense of control that it's a lot easier to handle these little curveballs. Because you know you did your homework. You know you did everything right.
And I want to say that the more curveballs you get thrown, the easier it gets. I mean, think back over the last 5 years, and when that first thing didn't, our first sale of our house didn't go according to plan, it was really quite a shock to us. Not because it hurt us financially, but just because we thought that there was such a small possibility of this being the curveball. And then as you move on and you keep getting more and more curveballs, you just start realizing that you can handle these curveballs and that it's not that bad. You simply adjust and you still have the freedom to do that. Which I guess brings us to point number 9, which is review and adjust. Because it doesn't matter what your goal is from the beginning, the truth is that things change and you change. So you may have a fixed goal in mind, and as you travel along that path, you may realize that your priorities have changed and you need to adjust that. Your goal is no longer what it was. You change what you want to achieve, or your path getting there hasn't quite worked out as you planned. So it's important to every now and then, and I would say at least on a 6 month, maybe to year
basis. I think annually basis, should be fine, unless there's a weird anomaly.
Unless there's a pandemic.
Unless there's a pandemic or something, or a baby.
Well, you should know about that in less than 6 months.
Hopefully.
But that you look at your net worth once again, you look at where you stand, where you are relative to your goal, and you reconsider not only your path towards your goal, but your goal itself. And there's nothing wrong with adjusting your goal or how you plan on reaching your goal as long as you remain focused.
There's a few interesting ways of thinking about this. A lot of people say if you're a passive investor, there's no point really looking at your investments regularly. As long as you have a plan and you stick to it, whether it's like you've got a debit order going off and goes into some EFTs somewhere, or you make some monthly contributions to your retirement funds, whatever the case may be. Personally, I like keeping my finger on things. I like checking our investments. I want to see what's going on.
Gives you a sense of peace of mind in a way.
It does. It's not like I'm doing something about it constantly, but I keep my eye on it. And I think the idea is that it sort of incentivizes you to be more in tune with when it's necessary to adjust your thinking. Because you start seeing patterns, you start understanding how the market works a little bit better, and maybe also how you fit into it. And especially if you track your expenses, you'll find that you're going to start tweaking the way you move money and where you invest to suit your priorities and your goals.
It does give you a certain amount of control by knowing, because knowledge is power in a way. And if you don't know, you might always wonder, ooh, how close am I? This is it. But when you start seeing... And it's fine if you realize, gosh, okay, I'm moving in the right direction, but I'm going a little bit slower than I thought. That's fine. At least you know you're going in the right direction. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter what that knowledge is, whether you're doing better or worse than what you thought, at least you know and you can adjust accordingly. Mm. And I think there's one thing here that you need to be careful for, and that is just procrastinating. So realizing, oh, I didn't save enough this month. Okay, I'll save next month. Mm. Or, okay, my goal was to travel at the end of this year and I'm not going to reach that, so I'll just put it out till next year. There's a big difference between reviewing and consciously adjusting your goal, whether it's changing your goal or moving it in timeline, and just constantly procrastinating. So that's a very big distinguishment I just want to make here. The idea is not to constantly push things out, procrastinate.
No, I don't think the idea is to... I wasn't under the impression we're adjusting goals yet.
Well, I think that's one of the things that you need to look at, because your goal can change, and that's fine. I mean, we had a certain goal when we started thinking about travel 15 years ago, and that was to make it a short-term travel.
Sure, but ultimately the goal is financial independence.
Yes.
That's the number one, because it gives you a freedom, and unless you've actually reached that point, you might not see other opportunities. So what's important is just to evaluate your path to that point and figure out what's the most efficient way to get there. But let's say we do get there.
Yay!
Then what?
Now we're financially independent. Let's go have a party and blow all
easy.
Our money.
It was only like 40 minutes. That's not that easy. All right, so we do get asked that a lot. What do you do when you're financially independent?
And don't you get bored?
Do I have to change my spending now? It's a weird thing about not working. We're so conditioned by society that we will receive a paycheck. This fake certainty in a way. It's a false sense of security. Mm. That it's a real mind shift to change your thinking and say, well, I'm not going to get that paycheck ever unless I go back and I find a job. I have to now rely on my calculations.
And myself.
Hopefully, I didn't make a drop to zero somewhere when we did all the planning.
Well, that would be fine, because then we'd have an extra zero. It's more important, it would be worse if you added a zero accidentally.
I added two zeros, honey. Oops, I have
we
to go back.
We don't actually have a million.
Oh, that would be a problem. So it's a difficult mindset. And, you know, we often talk about it in this way. It's like when you work towards financial independence, you have a savings budget. You know, you have saving goals. I earn so much and I want to save a percentage of my income towards retirement or financial independence. The moment you reach that goal, it changes. Now we don't have a savings goal anymore.
Now we have a spending budget.
We have spending goals.
And I think this is where some people get it wrong. They look at you and they say, oh, wow, you've reached financial independence. That's fantastic. You can afford everything.
No,
and
that's
not the case. This is where I think that difference between financial freedom and financial independence comes in once again. When you reach financial independence, it does not mean that you can just spend indiscriminately.
Because you still have to live within your means, because if you're indiscriminate about it, you're going to run out of money.
Well, this is the thing. Suddenly, that spending budget becomes so much more important.
So what we want to say is, when you get to that point, it's not caution to the wind and let's go party. It's spend less, especially once you reach that point. I would like to think that we've learned so many lessons and you will understand that the way you spend money ultimately depends on the choices you make. And you will make smarter choices as a result.
Well, this is the thing. These 10 steps that we've discussed now, even if they don't lead you to financial independence, they will teach you so much along the way about what is important to you, what is a priority, and what is worth spending money and effort on. Because every dollar or every amount that you earn has come from some form of effort. And it's all about balancing that amount of effort with the reward that you get for it.
Final thought?
I think for me, there's two things. The one is a positive thought, and that is you don't need to earn a ridiculous amount of money, inherit rich, or win the lotto in order to reach financial independence. Financial independence is within the reach of more people than realize that it's possible. However, the path towards financial independence is not an easy one. It's not something that happens overnight. It takes continued commitment towards it and reaching that goal. But the freedom that you can get from reaching financial independence, I think in our opinion, is absolutely worth every little sacrifice along the way.
Yes, so take responsibility. Be accountable. Remember that we live the life based on the choices we make and that we have control over more than what we care to believe. And that's where we're going to leave this discussion.
I think that's a good point to leave it on. This will also be an article on our website, wewillnomad.com. So if you have a look through the show notes, you're welcome to go and read the article to remind you of these 10 points and see whether you can follow these paths and reach financial independence.
We've had a lot of previous podcasts about budgets, but mostly about destination style budgets. This is actually the first finance style chat we've had, and you know, but people do show a bit of interest in it. I'm not sure if we will do more, but maybe we will get to a point where we talk about the saving portion.
And possibly what's enough? When is enough enough?
When is enough enough? How do you find that?
So let us know if you'd like to have a few more financial style podcasts.
Otherwise, dig into our podcast archives and you guys can have a listen to all our budget-related destination chats, and maybe you can find a good destination for yourself.
And if you have a look on our website, there is a section all under finance where we give you some other finance tips on how to move money abroad, how to cut and reduce fees, and some budget saving tips.
Yes, we actually updated a lot of those posts just recently. And if you subscribe to our
newsletter
on Substack, you will get a monthly email from us as well. If you
the
want to stay
end of this month, the newsletter is all going to be about money matters.
All right, great. So let's hope that it's going to be a good year for money. Make more, spend less, and hopefully some travel.
Sprinkled in between. I hope so.
And thanks for listening. As always, hope you enjoyed the episode, and we will catch you next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.